You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
People say, what do you want to do after football? And I'm like, what do you mean after football? There's nothing after football. This is what, you know, I was born to do, and this is what I enjoy doing more than anything else.
Go to Disney World!
Let's go! Let's go, baby!
Goes to the end zone. Tom Brady, first NFL touchdown pass.
Tom Brady probably has never tried to engineer a drive more improbable than this. Steps up, throws down the middle. Catch made by Austin Colley.
Fuck! Fuck!
Russell Wilson extends the hands he has. Pass. Wilson, quick throw.
And it's
intercepted! Intercepted by Malcolm Butler!
Toss to White.
He's in! Patriots win the Super Bowl! Brady has his fifth! What a comeback!
Tom Brady is a Super Bowl champion again for the record-setting seventh time.
The greatest player who ever lived has now retired. The Bucs need a quarterback, and Tom Brady walks into the Hall of Fame probably unanimous.
Probably. Definitely unanimously. Tom Brady has ended the greatest career in the history of the NFL. That's coming from a Jets fan. 22 years, a run of dominance, both statistically and as a team competitor, a guy who went to 10 Super Bowls, won 7 of them. And boys, as we begin a very special edition of the Around the NFL podcast, Dan Hansis with Mark Sessler and Greg Rosenthal. Greg, I think this stat kind of sums things up. There, you can't sum everything up with Tom Brady's career, which ended today with an official Instagram announcement with just one note, but this kind of gives you an idea. When Brady won his first Super Bowl in his second NFL season, that was way back in the 2001 season with the Patriots, he was the youngest starting quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl. When Tom Brady won his last Super Bowl in his second to last season with the Bucs, he was the oldest starting quarterback to ever win a Super Bowl at 43. He never, the gradual decline, Greg? No, he never declined.
Thank you and for that motivation that you gave him over the last six years. Yeah.
There you go. He never declined. And I think there's so many things to look back on, but the fact that he never got old like the rest of us and every one of his peers, that's what stands out to me.
Right. The last 2 years, I think, in Tampa are going to be remembered so much because not only did it kind of, you know, spike the football on any debate over who's the greatest ever, if it wasn't decided anymore, it was setting boundaries that no one's even thought about. Because his last season in New England, when they struggled down the stretch, when they lost in the first round of the playoffs, was easily the greatest season by a 42-year-old quarterback in the history of the sport. Like, nothing had ever even been close. No one had ever played an entire season as a 42-year-old in the history of the sport. And that was him actually looking like he was proven, you're right, Dan, a gradual decline. And then to go to Tampa and to have back-to-back seasons where you won the MVP, rather the Super Bowl MVP, where in the last 8 or 9 games of the season, he was clearly the best quarterback in the league. And this year, he would have gotten my vote for MVP. Reasonable minds can disagree, but certainly one of the best 2 or 3 players.
Not too late.
In the entire NFL. I know if Tom Brady had been thinking, he would have announced this like leading into week 18. And then I think he definitely wins the award over Aaron Rodgers. But unfortunately, the votes are in. The longevity is part of it, but it's longevity with excellence, because he was better post age 36, I think, than he was before, which is just hard to fathom.
I mean, I'd argue that at age 43, you know, last season, that he had more signature moments than 90% of all quarterbacks, you know, shoved together. I mean, the ones that fail and all of them, the good ones. I mean, prior to Matthew Stafford coming to the Rams, I remember thinking, like, I can't come up with 5 signature Matthew Stafford moments, yet he's a very good quarterback. But Brady just unfurled them and authored them nonstop. And, I mean, this is a guy that, like, essentially, it didn't matter if it was week 4 in 2006 or the Super Bowl, the height of the game. Like, each individual contest was Brady's sort of, like, Russian novel of intense focus, passion. He was wedded to the moment. And I think if you listen to it, it is instructive to me, not just what we think and journos think and podcasters, but his own teammates. And I think they lived essentially, you know, in the sunlight of his presence. I mean, they loved being his teammate. And, you know, I loved watching Tom Brady. And for all of us and for so many people, he encapsulated obviously an incredible span of time. But for me, when it started as the biggest height of my fandom, where I never had any thought back then that I would work in football. I just loved it, watching it. It absorbed my Sundays. And to go through the iterations of his career and to come and do what we've done and follow it along, and the fact that he's still here doing what he's doing, we're never going to see anything like it. And I utterly laugh at these anyone still bringing up anyone else at quarterback level that's anything better than Tom Brady. He is heads and tails above anyone else, and he's better than Michael Jordan. He's better than anyone. Ooh. He has set the standard.
Whoa.
I'm not whoa. Like,
he
is absolutely, football is different than these other sports. He is the standard. There is nothing else for me.
Well, that becomes bad if you think football is a better sport than the other sport. I think we don't
tougher
need to have a Jordan
longevity
versus,
it's tougher.
Right. The longevity and what he was able to do, I think that's part of the story. And I think, like, when the Peyton Manning retired after winning Super Bowl 50, there was a conversation still, like, who is the greatest of this era, maybe of all time? And then Brady went on to play 6 more years, and it was like those 6 years were Hall of Fame level years. Here's a little bit from Tom Brady and his Instagram message after, you know, it's almost started to become a little bit absurd, the Saturday reporting by ESPN, and then it was hanging out there. If this would have carried on too much longer, it would have started to feel weird. So I'm happy that if Brady really was walking away, it didn't drag out too much longer. Here is the official statement, or a part of it, from Brady. This is difficult for me to write, but here it goes. I am not going to make that competitive commitment anymore. I have loved my NFL career, and now it is time to focus my time and energy on other things that require my attention. One of the things, Greg, also about Brady's incredible career was that for so much of it, he was public enemy number one because of his success, because he had so many things in his favors. The team he was on, the individual accolades. He was a good-looking guy. He had the model wife. He was the most famous athlete in the country. So when he failed, even when the team failed, or when Brady failed, or there was scandal like the Spygate scandal, or Deflategate, or 18-1, or, you know, pick the Super Bowl loss, there was always this general idea of, like, whoever was on the right side against Brady and had the victory, like, it made it even more special. Like, I could say as a Jets fan, like, my number one win ever was the divisional playoffs up in Foxborough in 2010. Like, going into there and beating Brady, for me as a Jets fan and many others like me, that was number one because of Brady.
And to be that sort of measuring stick in a team sport like football is what's unprecedented. And that's part of why I started talking about the Bucks thing, because it did help separate Brady from just what they accomplished in New England. But you mentioned that debate, like the Manning Brady debate. I do want to kind of go back to to 2013, that Super Bowl. It was the Seahawks-Broncos. And in the front cover of NFL.com this morning, that morning, was, will a win in this game by Peyton Manning, and they were favored, which is hard to remember because they lost by 35, will this win cement Peyton Manning as the greatest ever? And I don't think that was a hot take at that point. It was kind of like this would put him over the top of Tom Brady at that time. It wasn't that long ago. And so the way that Tom Brady became the greatest ever was actually during our era, was during the Around the NFL era. We saw many of those games. He's the greatest because of that era. Since then, you know, that they won four titles, or he won four titles. The Patriots had three of them. He got the MVP. He was really a top three quarterback almost every one of those seasons, except for that ending one on the Patriots. And now we're at the point where Eli Manning is sending out tweets and saying, like, you are the greatest to ever do it. Even Peyton Manning's brother isn't even considering the fact that he could be competitive with Tom Brady. And like, I think about that comeback against the Hawks, against the Seahawks, as the single most important game of his career personally, because it ended the 10 years that they didn't have. It was against the number one defense of that year, the defining defense of that year. At the time, it was the greatest fourth quarter comeback in the history of the Super Bowl. And Malcolm Butler helped him along the way, but it really did just change things of where he went, because he changed as a quarterback really around 06-07. That's when his peak started. He was waylaid for 2 years by the ACL, wasn't quite the same by 09. From 10 on, he was just like full Tom Brady the rest of the way, and the wins started stacking up. And even the years that they didn't win the Super Bowl, like, included that Eagles game where he probably had his best Super Bowl performance, the 2015 AFC Championship against the Broncos, which to me is one of the most memorable games he ever had, with Gronk against that Broncos team, and they had no offensive line, no running game, and he still almost got them there. That's the thing, is like, he has as many memorable losses as any quarterback in the history of the NFL, which is wild too.
I mean, to your point, like, since turning 40, he's 70-24 with 191 touchdowns. I think any debate with Peyton Manning, which was juicy for a solid era, had vanished a long time ago. We never saw him suck. That's kind of what I love, is that, you know, we just came off the whole Big Ben experience, where it visually and psychologically tarnished what we think about, what I thought about Big Ben. Just the end is so wrong. And like, the 2010 Brett Favre season is still this like stink trap at the
what
end
about
of
Peyton
what was
Manning? You win the Super Bowl, but he was a shell.
It was. I mean, despite him, almost they won it. And right. That's not the way you want to go out. But Tom Brady, like, easily could have played next season. He was an MVP. I'm with you, Greg. I'd vote for him for MVP this year. So it's hard to leave football as a quarterback, but as anyone, in a graceful way. Almost everyone wants to go 1 or 2 years too far, where you look vulnerable. You don't look yourself, and our memories of you change. Our impression of you changes. He somehow goes out almost in Jim Brown fashion, but not after, you know, less than a decade, an incredibly, incredibly long career that, like, no one's ever going to touch this. This will never happen again. We've seen something that will never happen again.
He provided a roadmap, you could say, for other quarterbacks to attempt it, whether it's how he takes care of his body or who he surrounds himself with. But it does feel like it is like a once in a generation, once in a century type situation that he could go out this way. He led the league in yardage and touchdowns.
There's no other quarterback like it. I have to do this article ranking of Super Bowl era quarterbacks every year. And I went through like the top 20 and tried to look for something similar, and there wasn't really any.
Right.
Montana actually was somewhat close, but not.
But even
really.
he was definitely not the same guy in Kansas City as he was with San Francisco.
Montana got replaced, you know, and couldn't stay healthy. Right.
But
there's no
but
comparison.
The fact that Brady's career ended in Tampa in a very disappointing way, obviously. You're defending a title, but he did lead them on a 27-3 comeback. They got that game tied. His last touchdown pass was a bomb down the right sideline. You never questioned Tom Brady's arm strength as he edged into his mid-40s, beating Jalen Ramsey for a touchdown.
You did. Wes did, too. I remember this. I didn't like it.
What?
I didn't like it back in 2019, you know?
Well, all right. Okay. Calm down. Take it easy. But I'm saying once he had the sustained secondary peak, you never questioned anything about his physical tools. In fact, what made him a marvel also was, yeah, how it seemed like he was moving better. He wasn't faster necessarily, but he had mastered the intellectual element of the game and still had the physical skills. So he almost, you know, if he would have went out on a back-to-back title in Tampa, I guess that's the ultimate storybook ending, but this isn't a bad consolation prize.
Can I offer one gripe? And it has nothing to do with Tom Brady at all. It is the way this whole thing played out. And you mentioned it, Dan. It to me is deflating. And it's like Christopher Hitchens said that news by definition is what you don't know already and what you might not like when you get it. I really am a little, I know this is like, they're all part of our business, but the breaking news culture that we have where this thing, if there was ever a player to like not go, you know, skirt around the idea of honoring how Tom Brady would leave the game, but to have this thing break the day it did, takes the air out of the balloon, and probably completely disrupted the way Brady would have wanted to do it and forced him to do it today. Because you're right. It's like lingering. It's weird. We've got to get an official statement. It's one example of like, can we chill? Can we ever chill and like let someone go out on the, this is one guy that deserved to go do it his own way. And instead it's like, I've got to get my news flash out there. Super tedious.
I'm not too precious about that. I just feel like
I know you're not.
I just mean that it's.
I just found it annoying. It's like
just because it's news ultimately, and it's like it's just, you know, if he wants to announce it, then he could announce it when he knew for sure, and otherwise it's just like any other story. To me, it doesn't take anything away. Like Saturday got a great day of it, and everyone's talking, and today's getting a great day of it, and we're going to be talking about him for the rest of our lives.
I would imagine it seriously annoyed Tom Brady.
He was out of the country. He was out of the country on Saturday. He's trying to enjoy some peace and quiet, and it blew up. So I think absolutely it would qualify. Let's call it a bummer the way it's set up for him. But I think a year from now, certainly 5 years from now, when he goes into the Hall of Fame, we're not going to be thinking back to the Schefter situation. I know your greater point.
And poor Darlington, you know, keeps getting left out. Every time I hear people talk about this,
because whenever you do this, like Darlington. I have it, but so does, you know, Guy B.
I don't care.
My guess was Darlington probably had it more because he really developed.
But that's
that
not who was, he didn't get the lead billing. So take it up with ESPN, Greg. Right.
Yeah, I do appreciate though. Tom knew we were taping today. He let our podcast be better by doing it this morning, and he also really thumbed his nose at Jim Gray because he taped an edition of the Let's Go podcast on Monday evening, and in that podcast he said he hadn't made his decision about retiring. I mean, it's a tough spot for the Let's Go podcast. Let's be real. Imagine if one of us announced something important about our careers or our lives on our Instagram, like immediately after we taped a podcast.
And let's go off the air. I mean, yeah, because Tom Brady's not a huge podcast.
Yeah, and by the way, if you watch that, if you're going to listen to that podcast going forward, it's going to be like Tom hawking his health supplements. So enjoy the content there. It does. I think we kind of had this one nailed, though. The fact that the podcast had no real presence until last week and doesn't even get that. But on the subject, Ricky, I want to bring Ricky Hollywood in here. She is a lifelong Patriots fan. And Erica, that the Tom Brady goodbye message was 700 words. The image was Tom in a Bucks uniform. And over those 700 words,
Gillette,
he never...
Dan, that picture was him at Gillette. That is such an FU. Are you kidding
He never
me?
Mentioned Bill Belichick. He never mentioned the Patriots or Robert Kraft, and he never mentioned you, the Ever. Fan. Take me through it.
Well, okay. First of all, my friends, my group chat back home, going crazy, very upset, very, very, very upset. And I agree with them. It's hard to see this. Yes, we got our thank you a few years ago. And did he say specifically retire in that post? No. So he is stepping away, so he's thanking the Bucks organization. For him to put that picture of it, my voice is like this because I've been crying all morning. No, I was screaming about the Bengals. But I was actually like, okay, this is like whatever. Thank you, Tom, for like the best memories. Like I am honored to like that he is why I love sports. Like Tom Brady has been, you know, that failsafe forever. But it's like to throw the photo of him in the Bucks uniform at Gillette, like that is petty, bro. Like Come on.
And then now the counterpoint from Greg, where he tells you it doesn't matter. Go ahead, Greg.
He also sent out after he must have heard
you.
The feedback.
He retweeted something.
You understand. All right, let's just break this down, because let's not leave anything that, you know, out in the open and with any type of like a lack of awareness of how this played out. He writes the 700 words. He pours over every word and goes over it with all his people. Or maybe he just reads it 100 times and runs it past his dad. He sends it out purposely, keeping New England and everything, that element of his life, out of it, which it seems impossible to do for a guy that played 20 years then. And then when that becomes like, and this is why I think it was ultimately not the right move. There are multiple reasons, but like, that's going to be what people take out of it. And that's the story that started going viral this morning, which leads him to send out the two line tweet, which, by the way, bro, the toothpaste is out of the tube. I just wonder, and this is all more just Greg, just kind of fun to speculate on all this stuff, but there has to be something more to some of the relationship dynamics that he chose to do that. I hope they work it out in time, because you want him coming to Foxborough for different events and you want him part of it. But that really struck me as odd. I was going through, because you have to scroll through the messages. You scroll through the statement through the Instagram post, and I'm waiting for the New England part, and it just never came.
I think it is instructive that he sent like a 4-page thing when he left New England, like extolling the virtues of Bill Belichick and extolling all the people there and thanking them and Robert Kraft. Like, he did that. Like, you can go look at those.
Oh,
those
carry
images.
That water, Rosenthal.
No,
he's retiring now. He's talking about everything he'd done in his career, and he doesn't mention the place where he won 6 titles and went to 9 Super Bowls.
I guess I'm wired differently.
You think?
It seems crazy to me that like sports, that the fans would be so self-involved and like unappreciative.
Greg, you are out of control. I'm not even in New England, and I'm not like some of my crazy friends.
But like, I think the Boston sports fans are the worst sports fans in the world because of that. Like, because it, like, they make
Greg,
it sort
it
does, of about
it, it
themselves.
Could have been any
you.
Fan base in the country would have been personally hurt by that.
Of
but
course. It doesn't matter.
You could put if it we on were, Boston if you want.
If we were Eagles fans, we'd be chucking batteries at people because it's like, what, you're going to call us the worst fan base?
It's different than an actor, finally after many years winning like an Academy Award and thanking his second wife but ignoring his first wife who he divorced. Like, this is where his career was built. I do think that, to Dan's point, that was a meticulously thought out message, and so he meticulously thought out leaving New England, not in it.
He was in New England in the freaking photo.
Well, okay, but don't you think that, like,
intentional?
Everyone attached to putting that message out knew that, like, every talking head's gonna go crazy over the fact that the Patriots weren't in it. So,
well,
you know what's gonna happen.
I guess I hadn't thought about it that much. But maybe that's like what's helped make Tom Brady, Tom Brady. You know, like, I guess I'm at the point
think you're right.
Where, like, that's what made him great. But I also just don't think, like, this one statement, it's when everyone is paying attention rightfully. And sure, it deserves some attention. The way he has spoken about Belichick this season, the fact that they spent 25 minutes in the locker room, just the two of them, after that Week 4 game, and the way that they spoke about each other after that and throughout the last two seasons, to me, like, that means just as much, or like it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, doesn't
so
that
you're saying that it was an oversight?
Not an oversight, but just you can take it all in. And like, I take those words that he said throughout the last two seasons, the previous statements, and I take the fact that he left him out here, maybe because he's a competitor. You're right. Like, and that's all part of like the package who gave Patriots fans, including myself, like, the greatest joy of like a sports fan that you would ever
have.
So it just seems weird on the day that you're celebrating him personally to worry too much about that. Like, all that sort of passed.
I mean, I totally get that. And I think a lot of people, on Reddit and Twitter are going to be like, oh, Eric is a sad Pats fan just crying about it. It's like, this guy gave us 20 of the best years that we will ever have. And everybody in the league is lucky to see that. And he has been on my favorite team besides Jets fans and other fans that have lost. But listen, we are lucky to have witnessed this type of greatness. So am I thankful? Is Boston so thankful and appreciative? Yes, there is no argument about that whatsoever. People were rooting for him as a Buck because they love Tom Brady so much. But yes, was this a snub and was this intentional?
My point is he was gone 2 years ago and we're going to have the rest of our lives for him to say nice things and they'll have a Hall of Fame
speech.
He
sniffed the Patriots. There's no way around it. There's no other way. But that also, I don't want to say that that's where we should be like dwelling on this conversation. No. I just thought it was
interesting. We spent about 10 minutes on it.
10 minutes.
Well, I think you played a role in that, Greg. I think that the bigger picture still, obviously, I mean, I just want to read another thing. He's one of those guys where the numbers just blow you away. He finished with a 243-73 regular season record, 35-12 in the playoffs, won 3 MVP awards, selected to the Pro Bowl 15 times. Of course, the 199 pick in 2000. I'll say one more thing. And you're right, Greg. They hold the voting at the end of the regular season, but we can get a little tricky on this one, especially considering who's going to end up winning the award. We can make some moves here. I wouldn't be against it. I
just want to hear what Mark is so mad about. He's been very angry to not get in the last five minutes or so.
No.
Why
not? Keep going. I'm listening. Keep going. I'm hearing what Dan says. I would like to see if Aaron Rodgers wins this MVP. I will be extremely annoyed. He is not the MVP on any level.
Not at all.
I don't know how you do this.
Get ready.
Rejigger the vote. I know he is because the AP.
Reopen the books.
I give it to Tom Brady. Blow up the books. Write a new book and let's just get this right. And everyone can go to the bar and giggle about what they just did. And we won't know how it happened.
My last thought on this, and then you guys, please, also, if you have something else to share, because we do have to move on. There's a lot of other NFL news as well as we look ahead to the personnel carousel and, of course, Super Bowl 56. But I think he's in this category. I think he's in the Babe Ruth, Michael Jordan, Tom Brady category. I think he is in that, like, all-time holy sector of American athletes just because of all he accomplished and how he did it differently than anyone else. And I think unique is the word to me that best describes his career, because there was no decline. When it looked like there might have been one, he said, no, I'm going to change and flip the script. And there was part of a savviness to Brady as well. Maybe he would have stayed in a bit of a sustained decline if he was with the Patriots when they were kind of retooling and in a tough spot. But knowing when to maybe say, let me jump here to Tampa Bay and revitalize things, I think that was a brilliant bit of personal maneuvering as well. So he annoyed me. He killed me. He destroyed me for years and years and years. But I really do think, like Mark, you and I have worked at the company since 2010. Greg, you've been with us since 2013. You covered and went to Super Bowls.
2012. 10 years next month.
Wow. And like we got to see this and cover Brady in this back half of his career and go to numerous Super Bowls, including 28-3, including the Malcolm Butler game, including even, like I was saying earlier, the Eagles game where, you know, to be on the losing side, but that made that game even more interesting. You know, the Giants Super Bowls, it was just, I'm lucky to be able to have covered him. I have to say that.
I'm with you. Like, I was just trying to think about the fact that most of my Tom Brady memories are not about like these compiled stats and like his 40s versus other people's 20s. That's all relevant, obviously. But like, I remember being in the locker room after he lost to the Giants the second time and seeing like literal anguish on his face as he took long minutes trying to peel his socks off his injured body. And like, he was, you know, I know you hate this, but Jim Gray was sitting next to him and like Brady just looked very upset. I mean, I think about the time like years later when he beat the Rams and, you know, maybe he thought, this is the last time we do this with the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And he was going up to individual teammates in the locker room and not just give them a high five. Like it was like 2 or 3 minute long conversations, looking into their eyes. He is a genuine person. And if you defied him, because there was one time that I remember trying to defy the greatness of Tom Brady, you will pay the price. It was 28-3 against the Falcons. And I had to write this little NFL.com, you know, you must write some feature coming out of the game. So I had I wrote one at halftime. I got about 1700 words into how the Patriots defense let the team down. And even by the end of the third quarter, I was telling, you know, editor David Ely, I think this still works if they hold on. And we were both starting to question the concept of it. And as the minutes kept going, I started to realize I had been banged in the biggest of spots. I don't even have a column at this point. I went against Tom Brady, and you pay when you do that. He is on that mountaintop with Babe Ruth and Michael Jordan. He's on the top of it.
That's how I remember Tom Brady, is the Mark post-game filing after 51.
I'm just saying, it's personal moments, like good and bad, like things you learn about how fierce he was, you know.
I had about 500 words on Deion Jones and the Falcons speedy linebackers. I think in that game speaks in that game no one expected them to come back. But that game speaks to something Sheck wrote, which I totally agreed with, was like the greatest thing in sports is when you expect something improbable on paper to happen from like a truly great player, and it does. And he brought up that Seahawks moment as what he thought was the best moment of his career, and I thought so too. But there's just so many there's so many others. And football's funny because it is such a team sport. You can't divorce Belichick and Brady totally, and you can't divorce Brady from everything that happened in New England. But on some level, it does come down to the cliche of like, are you going to make that drive at the end of the game? Like, are you going to do it or not? And he will always be the greatest at that. One of the best, and sometimes it did come in loss. One of, if not the best drive of his life was 2007 against the Giants. They got the ball back down three, hadn't done anything all day with about 8 minutes to go. And he goes down the field, 10, 15 plays, 6 minutes to go up four on Eli Manning. Because that was the game where they felt every bit of pressure, that they were manhandled up front. Even after that drive, they didn't top 300 yards of offense. Yet when he was put with his back against the wall, to more than any other moment I thought of his entire career, that drive started inside the 10. He went down the field and he got that touchdown to Randy Moss to go take the lead and try to be the hero. And it didn't work out for him that day, because the defense didn't finish it off, and that's how football goes. Like he lost his best Super Bowl performance, as you mentioned, against the Eagles. I thought that was his best. But he just but he just kept going back, and he kept going in that position. And even in a game like that Rams game, again, after that interception, when they absolutely needed a drive to get it done, they changed what they did offensively all game. They changed the formation. He knows what the Rams are going to do in terms of adapting. And even on a day that was bad compared to that AFC Championship where he lit up Patrick Mahomes, that's the moment where you have to go make that drive if you're Tom Brady. Everyone expected him to do it. He throws it to Gronk, and he does it, and he adds another Super Bowl. It's just like that guy delivered.
By the way, Eli's no dummy. When he comes out today and records a video message saying, "Tom, you're the best ever," he's doing it for Eli because beat Tom in the Super Bowl twice. Peyton doesn't need to be the best.
He said
Tom's
that.
The best because
He brings it up. He has the same joke every time. He's like, "Thanks for letting me have a couple." Yeah. And why not? As he should.
I know the Bucks would have to cut him, and then there's money issues and all this kind of stuff. And obviously, there's so much behind the scenes with their relationship and everything. But like, just part of me, not all of me, is like, I wish he would like officially like sign a one-day contract with the Pats, and I know how improbable that is, and retire.
Remember what we talked about like 10 minutes ago?
I know. I don't think
that's happening.
I don't think it is at all. But
if it is,
also seems like a move by lesser stars or lesser, like they come back, like, you know, hey, they were a 5-year career in Atlanta. They went like to Kansas City for 2 years, fell off the map, and then they go back and have that ceremony at like 6 a.m. on a Wednesday with the Falcons. It's like, all right, let's move on.
They're gonna have their moments together, Ricky. I have no doubts about that. Him and Kraft,
there's no
and
grudge.
And
have some doubts. The future.
Have some doubts. Let's see what happens. But I want to ask you guys this: do you think there's any way he comes back?
Yes,
it's Brady. You never know.
Absolutely. I'll tell you why. Because if I have one concern, and I've stated this before, the way that Tom Brady is built, I think his intentions are genuine and pure for wanting to go be with the family, be with the kids. But I am concerned about like a dull milieu at post football and sort of just staring out windows. Like, it's going to be awesome for about 4 weeks. Then it's like, wait a minute, what do I win now? What do I do? It's like, you're still the best quarterback in the league.
There's nothing left to prove. I don't think so. It's why we won the quickest sandwiches we've ever won in this show off you.
You did.
Dan,
once it
even brought into his mind that he was thinking about it, he just seems like the type to walk away. And I am happy as just like a Brady fan that he didn't go out on 2019, that ultimately he was right. I mean, for all the people in New England that were mad at Belichick, and I wasn't one of them. I was on the wrong side here. I thought that was the time to make the divorce because I didn't want to see the decline. Like, he was right. He Tom Brady was right, and he proved it right. And that is like an ultimate exclamation point to end his career with.
Ricky and Dan, what happens to Greg when at some point in his adulthood going forward, he flies back into the state of Massachusetts and attempts to get off the plane into an airport? He is going to be destroyed by this.
Well, I was saying area. The Patriots fans were right there. They
I
were
just
right
think
about
of
that
Greg
one.
Giving like advice to maybe Ellis, where she's like, she gets her heart broken for the first time, or maybe, you know, we all get our hearts broken, and he's like, well, don't be sad, it's over, like, be happy it happened. And she's like sobbing on the bedroom floor. It's like, Dad, you suck, you're not helping anything.
You sound like a 13-year-old girl right now with that, yeah, that
so
voice.
Do you every day.
All right, everybody calm down. I know it's an emotional day for Patriots fans across the world. Tom Brady has retired after 22 years. All right, let's take a break. There is other things going on in the NFL, including some wild news unfolding as we record here. So let's take a break, and we'll hit the rest of the news.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now, you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
Welcome back. Time for News and Notes presented by Upwork, where you can build the team that will build your business. Learn more at Upwork.com. An explosive bit of news came down while we were having our Tom Brady discussion. Perhaps Tom Brady is connected to this story as well. Former Dolphins head coach Brian Flores is suing the NFL and teams within the NFL that he says have engaged in systemic racism, practices against black coaches. Flores named the league, the Dolphins, the Giants, as well as the Broncos, and John Doe teams 1 to 29 as defendants in the lawsuit. It's a class action complaint, which means other coaches, we're assuming, obviously, other black coaches or coaches of color could join him in the suit if they wish. There are some crazy boys revelations here and allegations. The suit says that the Dolphins, his former employer, of course, the Dolphins fired Flores after his third season with the team, despite having a winning record. Flores says that Dolphins owner Stephen Ross offered to pay him an extra $100,000 per loss during the 2019 season. That was the season when they started off poorly and everyone assumed it was a tank job. Ross wanted the Dolphins to lose enough games to secure the first overall pick in the 2020 draft. The Dolphins improved that season as it went along, apparently not or allegedly not to Stephen Ross's liking. Flores also alleged that Ross tried to get him to recruit a, quote, prominent quarterback who was under contract to another team. So this would have happened two off seasons ago. That would have been a violation of the league tampering rules if that player was under contract, which he most certainly was at the time. Flores says he refused to be a part of that situation. The lawsuit also says the Giants scheduled an interview with Flores last week to comply with the Rooney rule, even though they already knew they were going to hire Brian Daboll as head coach. He finds out about it, Flores, because Bill Belichick mistakenly texts him under the impression that Brian Daboll is the hire for the Giants. He had been misinformed. It was obviously excuse me, Brian Flores was the hire. He had been misinformed. It was Brian Daboll getting hired. So, and finally, just to put a bow on the Broncos side of it, Flores contends that 3 years ago, he was involved in the same type of sham process with Denver when they hired Vic Fangio. And here's a statement from Flores. In making the decision to file the class action complaint today, I understand that I might be risking coaching the game that I love and that has done so much for my family and me. My sincere hope is that by standing up against systemic racism in the NFL, others will join me to ensure that positive change is made for generations to come. Greg, this is on the day that Tom Brady officially announces his retirement. This is a massive bombshell, and it's going to reverberate across the league.
It is remarkable. I'm still trying to digest it and where to start. If you've ever heard Brian Flores talk about racism, about what it's like to be a black man, a black coach in this country, this fits right in with it. Like he is one of the most passionate and like intelligent speakers on that topic. And he is not a man that you would want to mess with, I think, in this arena. And I think Stephen Ross is finding that out. That's where I'll start with it, just because that allegation that his owner offered to pay him extra money for every loss that they had goes against the competitive rules and everything that the league is supposed to stand for.
Yes.
And so it's separate from the racist hiring practice, and we can get to the Belichick Bills thing, which is probably, those are probably the two biggest things in this story. But that is an explosive allegation and cuts to the core and is the NFL's worst nightmare. Really, this story is on two fronts, and that's one of those two fronts.
Right. If the Rooney Rule started, and it did, with good intentions to make a change, I mean, there has been suspicion around how it's been used year after year. And like you, there hasn't been, you know, tangible searing anecdotes like this about the fact that certain candidates are brought in, but you get a sense that Team A already knows who they want. Now we have these anecdotes. And if Brian Flores, I think you could argue that Flores is putting himself in a position where it could impact his own career. But to Greg's point, he believes in these topics. He's not alone. The league needs to change. The numbers show that. They vet that out. And it goes down to the fact that, you know, even beyond Stephen Ross, it is an ownership issue. It is clearly an ownership issue in who they hire, how the practicing of hiring goes down. It's been a black mark on the eye of the NFL for years and years. It continues to be. And this is, I mean, this is sort of everyone that's been looking at this for years and years saying, we know this is happening. This report, these anecdotes are basically bricks being dropped.
He's got screenshots.
Bricks.
He's got screenshots, right, that are public now of the Belichick interaction and how that played out was Belichick congratulate him, thinking he had the job. And it turns out that Belichick, and they have Belichick's, all of his responses, which is fascinating, that he misunderstood the text that he was getting. That Brian,
we get to see Belichick text coming out of this?
They're there, Dan.
What a story.
They're there now. And he said, sorry, I effed this up. I double-checked. I misread the text. I think they are naming Daboll. I'm sorry about that, BB. And that was before Flores...
Right, days before Flores interviewed. I mean,
right,
that,
and it all checks out because Joe Shane is the GM who the Giants hired, who worked with Daboll. Basically, they knew when they hired Joe Shane that they were going to hire Daboll as their head coach, and they had to go through with what Flores is rightly pointing out was a sham Rooney Rule interview.
This is incredibly admirable, I think, of Brian Flores, because, yes, this has been an issue, a glaring issue for the league, for years, that it's a predominantly black league players-wise, but the head coaching ranks are predominantly white, and we're not seeing progress in that realm, even though they enacted the Rooney Rule, which, if you're not aware what the Rooney Rule is, it means if you are making any head coach hire, and I think they expanded this now to front office as well, you have to bring in a person of color to interview as well, to try to level the playing field. But it is proven to be something that doesn't seem to really lead to a true increase in the number of coaches, because it bears out when you look at it every year. And the reason bringing this to light And in this manner, and dropping a bombshell on the league, that's the type of stuff that can actually lead to tangible change. So I really admire that. And I also admire him because he's coming off a 3-year run in Miami that was largely successful. And if he didn't get another head coaching job this year, he probably would have gotten one next year. And I don't know where this goes for Dable, for Flores, but it could go down a road where he doesn't get another head coaching job, because that's just what we've seen from the league. Look at Colin Kaepernick as a prominent example. So he's putting himself out there, and I think it says a lot about his character.
Also, one other thing. I mean, if you want to know who loved Brian Flores, his players. I mean, there were one after the next glowing report from the players who loved who Brian Flores was. And every time he got one of these head coaching interviews during this cycle, of course, what else is in our mind? The fact that the Dolphins put out concepts and ideas that Brian Flores was tough to work with, that he didn't go along with the plan, he wasn't collaborative. That's rough stuff to put out there about a coaching candidate. But behind the scenes, all this was happening? Come on.
Well, allegedly. We're going to find out. But sure, yes, if this turns out to be true, and we'll see, maybe it gets proven, who knows? That would give us a lot of context to, yes, those reports that came out when he was let go of how he was difficult to work with. The meeting with the unnamed prominent free agent or quarterback, which, you know, connect dots, it could be Tom Brady if you line up when Tom Brady became a free agent and eventually signed with the Bucks. There was a meeting on a yacht, and in the lawsuit, he walks off the yacht when he's the yacht of the owner, Stephen Ross, when he sees what's trying to be set up, a meeting between a prominent quarterback, the owner, and the head coach to do something that shouldn't be done because you can't tamper with the player currently under contract with another team. This is a crazy story. This is I like now looking at, now that we've been doing this, we're going into our 10th season. I like the biggest stories of the ATN era, the biggest game of the ATN era, all that stuff. This one could end up being right up there. It has that many layers and could have the repercussions that could really shake the league.
One thing. Yeah. Think of who it involves. It involves the Giants, you know, one of the league's
Tiffany brands.
Right. And it involves this Dolphins team and a powerful owner in Stephen Ross. And separate from the hiring, really goes out of, you know, part of the intent, I think, is to show people who the Dolphins are, because those allegations with the Dolphins don't have to do with hiring. They have to do with how they're running their business. It said that they were pushing Flores, that ownership was pushing Flores to recruit this prominent quarterback late in the 2019 season. You're right, Dan. I think you can, you know, connect the dots of who that likely is, in that, yeah, this yacht meeting that the owner set up where the quarterback just happened to be in the area took Flores by surprise. He is currently, Flores, a finalist for the Houston Texans coaching job. He was an interview with the Bears too, in addition to the Giants. So that Texans search is actually ongoing, and he was one of three people brought back for a second interview. So that's just one more.
I don't think he's going to get that job. I don't know. That's just my feeling, but we shall see.
If they hired Josh McCown, which feels like a strong possibility, I think that goes to what he's talking about on a bigger level, in which is more the point. If you read what this suit starts with in all the stats of the lack of black coaches in the league, that speaks to his point. If Josh McCown gets a head coaching job over him.
Whoa! This is a big one. This is a big one. People are very uncomfortable right now in various buildings across the league.
I know. I was wondering what Bill Belichick is thinking. He's just finding
out. I want to see more Bill Belichick texts. I want to see all sorts of texts.
I mean, you can. Yeah, they're there. They're pretty basic. They're pretty basic. They seem.
He signs it with BB. He just says
he signs the text iPhone? BB, which is a classic.
Oh, he signs his text. That's such a boomer move. Does he have an iPhone, Ricky?
Yeah, he does. He does.
Good, good, good. We don't want another Colleen situation, Ricky.
Right, because she has an Android. So
right. All right. And you know, we do this podcast multiple times a week through the off season. So buckle up, Marky boy. We got a subplot to track now. You thought it was going to get quiet? It ain't quiet.
No, I don't think it's. In fact, I only expect every NFL offseason to get incrementally more madhouse from the one previous.
I think you're right. That was News and Notes presented by Upwork. the world's work marketplace. Learn more at upwork.com. All right. So, yes.
Now we get to the part of the show that would have started the show if Tom Brady hadn't retired and Brian Flores' news didn't happen.
Exactly. All right, Brian Daboll is the coach of the New York Giants. We were going to play some sound from that, but that doesn't – that feels a little weird now. Like, well, I will say this. I mean, Daboll deserves this opportunity based on what he's done in Buffalo, and this is a big moment for him, and I think it's a good hire for the Giants. I don't know if we want to get into analysis of the Daboll hire right now. I guess it's now or never. It does make sense, and I thought it was interesting in the reporting that – and I think there's some – fortuity involved for Daniel Jones, given the draft class and the free agent market, that it looks like he's going to get another shot here with a real offensive coordinator who just built out Josh Allen's career, helped build it out. So you have a new GM in Joe Shane that's aligned with the head coach from the same organization, and now they get the chance to do the Josh Allen treatment to Daniel Jones. If I'm a Giants fan, I'm feeling optimistic. Although concerned about the latest story that came out surrounding Brian Flores.
I mean, I don't know if I am feeling optimistic. The one thing that I find is rarely, well, it's a bit of a, it can be a trap, is hot coordinator X goes to new team minus like MVP level quarterback Y and is going to fix hot and cold quarterback Z. It doesn't often work. And I want to see if they even give Daniel Jones the fifth-year option. I do feel like, because the Giants had done this in the past with their coaches, you know, Eli Manning would be an example, kind of forcing Brian Daboll to, you know, work with Daniel Jones. Not that he wouldn't this season, but, like, I see it as a one-year experiment and get out of there if he continues to be who he is.
Right, yeah. They could easily not give him the extension, and he could still have a chance to have a long-term future there. Like, I think that's a totally reasonable way to go at the fifth-year option, that is. I believe Daboll, he spoke very highly of Daniel Jones. I guess what's he going to say? But I think that's part of the reason why they hired him. I don't mind Daniel Jones. I would like to see him in a better situation. I think he showed some progress last year. I just think if you're looking at the market as a whole, unless you're ready to go swinging for these Russell Wilson or Aaron Rodgers types, or who knows with Watson. Like, I think Daniel Jones is a completely reasonable option over everyone else that's available. That actually, I wouldn't mind seeing that. It's really the offensive line and the scheme, I think, that needs to be fixed more than anything. And you're counting on Daboll to do that. Look, he had Josh Allen for 2 years before it really started getting going. So it's tricky, but Daniel Jones has been in the league for 3 years. I think he's a worthy guy to try out, like it compared to a Jameis or a Teddy or a Garoppolo. Why not try it out with Daniel Jones?
I think Daboll got a lot of credit, and rightfully so. Yes, Josh Allen is ultimately the engine that made that offense special in his development, but Daboll in not just being there from the ground floor with Allen, but even after some ups and downs in the first 2 years, they went into that third year in 2020 and kind of changed the offense and said, we're putting it more on this kid and putting our faith in him. And they were a much more aggressive attack. And I think Daboll saw something in Allen and helped develop him. So there's no slam dunks. I know exactly what you're saying, Mark, but I feel like he is kind of a safe pick. And I just think it's a functional setup, because he has a relationship with the GM as well. It feels like the Giants may be getting on the right track, at least from coach and upstairs personnel. That part,
and you know, we've hammered that home with all of these hires. That matters the most. They were never in sync. In fact, I think it's instructive that Daboll actually got on the phone with Joe Judge to ask about like his former employer who's about to hire him and still took the job. So, I mean, not that he wouldn't have, but it's like there was, you know.
Well, they worked together a long time. I mean,
they did.
People don't think about Daboll as a Belichick guy, but he's absolutely a Belichick guy. He had two different stints, worked for more than 10 years with the Patriots organization, then kind of saw his star rise when he went to go work with Nick Saban and come back. So it's like, we'll get to McDaniels in a second. People, all the failures on the Belichick coaching tree, it hasn't stopped owners from continuing to give it a shot. One quick thing on this is that the Giants tried to hire Ken Dorsey away from the Bills. That was Josh Allen's quarterback coach. They wanted him to be the offensive coordinator. The Bills stepped up according to reports financially, and they kept Ken Dorsey. Josh Allen had publicly stumped to keep Dorsey, and it sounded like that made a difference, and they ended up like matching what would have been a pretty big raise, I guess, from the Giants, and he's staying in Buffalo.
It's funny how having a playoff and two-year run like Josh Allen gives you a louder voice in the room. Maybe that's what Aaron Rodgers has been talking about all this time. Yes, we mentioned Josh McDaniels, the longtime offensive coordinator and architect of the New England Patriots offense, a man who knows Tom Brady very well. See how this is all connected in a big picture way. Let's galaxy brain this thing and see how it's all of one. It's like that. It's like the PTA movie, Mark, Magnolia. It's like everything is connected. The frogs are about to fall from the sky. Josh McDaniels.
I hated that ending of that movie. That couldn't have been any possibly cheesier.
And I love that Amy Mann song, too, but we're all singing it together. Like,
if you cut out the first 15 minutes and the last 10, that's a classic.
But that's right up there with a boogie in a big spot. All right. Anyway, the Raiders. See, we give you everything. Football analysis and a little film critique. Just a little dash just to show
you
that we're there.
I watched Licorice Pizza, Dan, on your recommendation.
Oh, you finally did. Did you enjoy
it? One of the best films I've seen in a long time.
I thought you would like it.
Yeah. You were.
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, let's stay on this PTA kick we're on. Greg, one of your favorite films, Phantom Thread. I finally sat down and watched that about a month ago, and quite enjoyable, beautifully made picture. But also, I found it interesting trying to figure out why Greg Rosenthal connected with it on the level he did. So we're going to save that for the offseason.
Extremely rewatchable, brilliant. Punch Drunk Love, another great one, but not to the level of Phantom Thread. But
the Las Vegas
banger
Raiders
after banger.
Yes, have hired Josh McDaniels as their new head coach. The former Pats offensive coordinator is getting another shot in a head coaching chair. The Raiders also hired Patriots director of player personnel Dave Ziegler as their general manager. So very similar deal with Buffalo, big names in Buffalo going to the Giants, big names with the Pats head to the Raiders. McDaniels, of course, flopped in his two-year stint as head coach of the Broncos in 2009-2010. He famously walked out on a handshake agreement to become the head coach of the Indianapolis Colts a few years back. And I remember there was much hand-wringing about how he had just lit his future on fire, would never be a coach again. Well, guess what? He is. Here's what McDaniels had to say. Things are different now than when I was head coach the last time.
You know, when I went to Denver, I knew a little bit of football. I didn't really know people, and how important that aspect, of this process and maintaining the culture and building the team, was, and I failed and I didn't succeed at it. And so, looking at that experience has been one of the best, things, in my life in terms of my overall growth as a person, as a coach.
All right. So here's if he needs to be better as a, you know, person to person type communicator, he's going to have a potential challenge right out of the gate because there's some bubbling behind the scenes at the Raiders, and many of the players were big on Bisaccia and what he had brought to that team after Gruden resigned in disgrace in October, Mark. So will they get on board with Josh McDaniels? Probably. But that's kind of a tricky way to start your tenure. All the guys like the old coach.
Yeah, I mean, it's the very unusual scenario where the new hire has to somehow outshine the interim coach and what he did down the stretch, which is win over the entire team because of who Rich Bisaccia was. And I think if there's been questions about Josh McDaniels, okay, look, when he hasn't been with the Patriots, that Broncos team was a disaster in multiple ways. He went to the Rams in St. Louis for 1 year and had the 32nd ranked offense in terms of points. Outside of New England, three of his four worst seasons as an OC have been with two other teams. So I think that needs to be proven. But he graces over the fact that part of the Denver Broncos meltdown was a videotaping scandal where they taped the 49ers during before a game in London with San Francisco. So when I hear
where
this,
where do you learn that trick?
Well, I don't understand that people think I'm matured. People do change. I do think he's probably learned a lot about coaching since then. But I would tag it with this. When I think of the Raiders, when they were in Oakland, when I think of the Los Angeles Raiders and even the Raiders in Vegas, what is more countercultural to everything we know about the Raiders and over these past decades than the Patriot way. It feels like an odd fit. I know Mark Davis wants these names, wants these guys, but you're going in with a scenario where, again, you're saying we'll make it work with Derek Carr. You got to figure out if you're going to extend Derek Carr, if he wants that. But I think the players get in line. I think the fit is an odd one.
Yeah, seeing McDaniels there with the black and white suit and the silver and black helmet, it looks weird. And I get why they would want to hire him. I think he's a great offensive coach. I think he's really good at adapting his game plan week to week. Obviously, it helps with having Tom Brady, you know, for most of your career. But I think the work he did with Mac Jones helped him get this job. He wanted that Chargers job last year, and Telesco had worked with the Colts before, and they didn't want to talk to him because of that experience. So that hurt him there, but it didn't hurt him here. I think it's a good hire, and I do believe him that he really likes the idea of Derek Carr, because Carr seems like a good fit for what they want to do. I think it takes a quarterback who wants to win before the snap. To win that way, if you're going to change your offense each and every week, they'll be more unpredictable. And I think Derek Carr could be that guy. But you said it, Mark. He's entering the last year of his contract. He's underpaid relative to league average for quarterbacks. You know, he'll be one of, if not the cheapest veteran quarterbacks in the entire NFL if they didn't upgrade his contract or give him an extension. And so that's the first thing that he's going to have to handle. And I think it's good that he's going with like another Patriots guy there, Ziegler, because I think one of his biggest problem in Denver was not just dealing with the players, but dealing with his bosses, with his GM at the time and his ownership. And that's what got him blown out there. I mean, he did have a couple of moments. Do you remember there was, I think it was a Monday Night Football game, but I might be wrong, with McDaniels getting to 5-0 and doing these fist pumps, jumping down the sidelines.
Against the Patriots.
Right. And everyone was like, wow, this is the new boy wonder. And it all collapsed like almost immediately after that.
I think that was a Sunday afternoon, if I'm not mistaken, but he was running up and down the field. And one of the bigger, it almost felt like, it almost smelled like a parody of an NFL coach celebrating, because it was so surreal.
It was a bad
there was a Dean scream in there somewhere, as I recall. All right. Well, and by the way, make a decision on Carr and just do it. Either give him the money.
I would say give him the money. Yes.
Give him a new contract or trade him, because guess what? You would get a nice bundle back this particular offseason for Derek Carr, I do believe. And he's a tradable asset. Don't play this out and then maybe tag him or go into some protracted contract negotiation. Like, this seems like a time to make a decision on Derek Carr one way or the other.
One quick thing on just the Patriots side of it.
I had a great transition set up. It was going to be so good.
You can still get to it.
I was going to say, speaking of make a decision, the Jacksonville Jaguars, but now it's all lost, Greg. This better be so good.
It is good. It's the brain drain in New England. I know people have left over the years, but think of who have been the most important people to Belichick in the last 20 years. It's Nick Caserio. It's Josh McDaniels. It's Dante Scarnecchia.
Scott Zolak.
And it's Ernie Adams. Those are the four guys that were there with him basically throughout all the winning. Those four guys, and they're all gone. And I do think there's something to that. Has he developed like this next wave of coaches and front office guys to be like the guys? We'll see. Like, maybe he brings back Joe Judge or Flores. Like, those are a couple of other guys. But those guys, Scarnecchia, McDaniels, Caserio, Ernie Adams, like, those were his like four horsemen, and they're all gone right now.
That's
Did
fair.
That pass
dog.
Muster? Okay.
I think it does. That passes. Okay. I think that was good insight on one of the more well-known franchises in football. On the other end of the spectrum, one of the least known franchises in football, see, not as good. So we got to think
it
of
lost
what
its juice, because
what
we
did we
also,
gain?
You know, no.
What did we lose? I mean,
we gained some great nuggets. I'm listening to you guys just go on. It's like, we gained great nuggets from Greg, but Dan, I think you're a showman. And your show was, you had to kind of do a second run, maybe with not.
We need to start, you know, doing the Zoom thing since we're still taping remotely, where it's like I press my hand raised, so you know I need to like get in one more thing, you know.
You guys, we've not to ruin the flow of the show.
Oh, another one like that. And now we got her coming in.
Yeah, but
we got minute 89 here.
You guys just have talked so much that I need to insert a break right here.
That old man retired, and then an atomic bomb was dropped on our league. It's not our fault. And then Greg had that take about New England, so let's take a break.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.
All right, we're back. Speaking of something, 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 blah, 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 sports, the Jacksonville Jaguars, their winding search for a head coach continues. They will conduct a second interview with former Eagles head coach Doug Peterson. Peterson was in the building like a month ago and had, according to Bert Breer of MMQB, trepidation over the setup in Jacksonville. Implying there might be, you know, heat around somehow Trent Baalke still being the GM there. We heard a similar thing about Byron Leftwich, who at one point looked like he was going to get the job, but he supposedly didn't want to be involved with Trent Baalke as GM. There's also Rich Bisaccia is in the mix. He looked like he was going to become the special teams coach of the Bears, but then the Jags were like, hey, bro, you want to come in? You want to maybe be the head coach? We're up to, I think, 10 double-digit head coach interviews now, with Peterson now being the guy that makes some logical sense. But, Mark, for a job that is on some level as alluring as being the head coach of, I know now it feels like it's a little bloom off the rose, but there shouldn't be, Trevor Lawrence, a transcendent prospect. Nobody seems to really be running toward Jacksonville to get a big chair. That's how it feels.
Right. And they have interviewed Rick Spielman, the former Vikings GM, for what they call a high level front office position. I wonder if that turns into maybe just the general manager position. If this Trent Baalke, I don't know him personally, obviously, but I can't really recall a more universally disliked individual in terms of reports.
Well,
but beyond
the Houston
that,
front office, maybe there's a okay, competitor, well, but they're kind of in the same tree. It almost feels like
Trent Baalke also went away for a long time, and then he's come back, and he's still very unpopular. So it's enduring, but it goes against what we're talking about, the marrying two people that can work together. And the one thing I think about Shad Khan, you know, early on in the Jaguars run, it was like, this team's innovative, they're into international football, they want to be collaborative, blah, X, Y, and Z. There was, even though they weren't winning, it was like, you can sort of see it, and it's maybe revolutionary, but they keep getting this wrong over and over. And it just seems to me, if you're onto your multiple head coach and GM, have you not figured out the unification of these two positions? If you look around the league, that's where it works over and over. And instead, they've got a guy in there that people dislike openly, report after report, trying to shove a head coach to work with him. I mean, it seems like a disaster.
It's been some tough reporting out there. I mean, the reporting was they had three finalists. One of them is now the head coach of the Broncos. One of them, was it Eberflus? It was now the coach of the Bears. And the third one was reported to be taking the job along with, that's Leftwich, along with an executive, Adrian Wilson from Arizona. That clearly isn't happening. Like, and then they open the finalist round again. It's just, if you're a Jaguars fan, and I follow, I feel like more than my fair share of Jaguars reporters and fans on Twitter, because I had that call out. I don't know if you remember early in the year of like, oh, who's a good, who's some good Jaguars people to follow? And I got a lot of great suggestions. John Shipley's great, many other great ones. And it's a tough scene. It's been a tough couple of weeks for these Jaguars fans. They are going crazy.
In other coaching news, I hesitate here, if you could hear it, to dig into this because it feels like it could happen anytime, and maybe we'll have a more thorough conversation about it. But the name is big enough where we should at least get it on the radar for this show that Jim Harbaugh is a finalist for the Vikings head coaching vacancy. That's from NFL Network's Mike Garofolo. Garofolo reports that Harbaugh is, quote, deep in the process of vying for the team's head coaching spot as he prepares for a interview that will take place on Wednesday. He is currently the head coach for the University of Michigan, where he's had some success, just like he had a success with the 49ers. Before that, there is a new general manager, obviously, Rick Spielman out in Minnesota. Kwesi Adofo-Mensah is now the GM, and they were both in the 49ers organization together. So connect those dots, as always. So Harbaugh to the Vikings. If I'm a Vikings fan, I'm into the idea of it. We'll see if they could get their man.
It's interesting that he's going to Minnesota and meeting with him. I mean, that to me indicates, just feels like one of those big business deals that they're not going to be meeting unless there's a good chance of closing the deal, that they've already done a lot of.
Right. Minneapolis in February is pretty tough. We're aware of that.
Well, plus he's the coach of the Michigan Wolverines, like one of the best college football teams. So to get this far down the road during recruiting season, our guy Ian Rapport said there were, at one point, there were three finalists for the Vikings job. One of them, D'Amico Ryans, has taken his name out, reportedly. The other two coach for the Rams, Raheem Morris and Kevin O'Connell, neither one of which can be officially hired because they're still playing and can no longer like interview.
They go.
It just feels like if they can close the deal, this could be Harbaugh, so get ready.
We got a lot of enjoyment out of the Mike Zimmer, Kirk Cousins relationship / non-relationship. I do wonder what a Jim Harbaugh, Kirk Cousins, because Jim Harbaugh, he burnt out in San Francisco at the end there. And I think that he's a guy that like his message is going to run hot for a series of time. And then he's not going to be there after some time.
You can't tell me that doesn't sound fun, though. This feels something that's going to make the NFL more fun to cover.
Oh, yeah. I'm
all
for it.
Jim Harbaugh is one of the weirder personalities. He's very bizarre with the press. I mean, I enjoy it. But Kirk Cousins is like a glass of milk. And so it's like the two of them don't totally feel joined at the hip to me.
Remember when the Harbaugh Bowl happened? It was 49ers-Ravens.
Yes, I do.
Super Bowl 47, I believe it was. And John was like handling all the media. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of media crush because they were brothers against each other in the Super Bowl, something that has never happened before. John went along with it and then went on to win the game. Good for him. Jim was a total weirdo the entire week. We had a front row seat because we were covering press conferences. Jim was never even like there were, they had the Harbaugh dad up there and Jim was trying to get off the stage. He's wired differently, but I think like there had been connections to Harbaugh to New York teams in recent years. It's like, I don't know about all that. You put him up in Minnesota, that feels like this could work.
Incredible success, too. I mean, with Alex Smith, with Colin Kaepernick, that's one of the boldest and best quarterback decisions and changes that's in the history of the NFL. The fact they didn't go back to Alex Smith and it worked so well offensively.
Hey, Kyle Shanahan, maybe you should have paid attention. Go on.
including in the Super Bowl. I think it felt like it was like things were changing in Michigan when the Ravens hired the Michigan defensive coordinator, Mike McDonald, to be their defensive coordinator this week. And someone made the joke like, well, just like everyone, Mike McDonald of the two Harbaugh brothers likes John better. But I think there's a little more than that. I think there's like a little more than that. He literally let his top coach go to the Ravens. Like that sounds like a man ready to say bye.
Yep.
Finally in the news, gotta love it. Joe Theismann, Washington football team legend. He's in the Ring of Honor. He's a big deal. He's a Super Bowl champion, longtime media dude. He went on the Damon Amendolaria. That's a tough one. I've always struggled with his name. I'm going to call him DA because DA, he calls himself DA, CBS Radio. And he let one slip. And I don't mean, like a gas issue. This something else. There was a slip.
The Commanders is a name that, is going to be a hopefully one that people will talk about going forward.
All right. So you like the Commanders as the new team name, huh?
There were so many different options, but once again, it's trademark infringement. It's getting approval from different people. It's, if you choose a name, is there a group out there that isn't going to like it? I mean.
And then this just made me laugh. Then Joe, who seemingly unaware that Washington is supposed to be announcing the name of the new team name, I believe, tomorrow, just starts talking about Commanders and what a commander is, which is funny.
A lot of Commanders in Washington, D.C., in the Pentagon, and a lot of different branches of the service. And a
lot of.
So to me, that's sort of the way I'm looking at it, as positions of leadership.
Sure.
When it comes to the new name.
A lot of Commanders, down there in the Pentagon. Of course, then the Washington Times reaches out and says, hey, Joe, so I guess you just let the cat out of the bag. He's like, hamana. No, I know what you know. I'll find out tomorrow. It's the Commanders. I mean, we're, I guess, an NFL podcast, so, don't come after us. We're not reporting it.
No, Joe
Theismann already told us. He talked
for 2 minutes, just assuming everyone already knew it was the Commanders, which is hilarious.
Maybe Joe thought it was Wednesday. Maybe he got his days mixed up.
It's such a. First of all, it's a typical Joe Theismann moment. I miss Wes on this show. I miss Wes every day, but I miss him being able to put Tom Brady in perspective. I'd love to hear what he would say. And I miss him for this story because Joe Theismann opening his mouth and saying too much was kind of a thing Wes would talk about and note for forever. I mean, Joe Theismann had a bizarre broadcasting career and a bizarre playing career in which saying things that ended up getting the organization in trouble was like kind of what he did. So it's almost perfect that this is how the name is getting out.
I mean, it's like NFL branding is top secret stuff. That's the whole thing. Why did the inner circle who knew that this Commander's name and like, give me a break with name dropping the Pentagon, like that's pure white driven snow. Enough with that business. But the idea that Joe Theismann was
Mark
brought
into, anti-government. I love it.
The idea that Joe Theismann is brought into the inner circle as a secret keeper, that shows you that that Washington has not figured out entirely how to run its own
show.
Well,
they got to tell him, you're right. They should have just said, show up at 2 p.m. at the press conference and we'll see you there, Joe.
And I'm not, waving a flag as a patriot, Mark, but I don't think he was saying anything specifically about the Pentagon is a pure as the driven snow entity. He just said there's a lot of Commanders in Washington, D.C. and the Pentagon.
Well, that's true. I don't disagree with that, that those are their titles.
So anyway, when the news comes out and they're the Washington, Robins or whatever, then you're going to find out this is all much ado about nothing. But Joe, good to know you. Never change. All right. I think we got everything. It turned into a supersized Tuesday show. That's not what we aim for typically, but Mark, that's somehow sometimes that's just the way things go.
We are incapable of doing a show under 85 minutes, and so I don't know what supersize is or regular size at this point. It is what we do, and we will not cease.
You sound enthusiastic about the product and the podcast and being a part of it.
No, I'm claiming more fact that we keep talking. We continue hey, we'll be a nice tight 45 minutes today. And then another 40 minutes goes on top of it. If they listen and enjoy it, I'm happy that it's that long. Double it. Let's make 168
more time,
minutes.
more ads. And that's what I'm really looking for.
Right. Someone getting rich. Some commander in the Pentagon.
Bingo.
Getting that guap.
I still want to know what Mark was so mad at during the Brady back and forth. But I think it was just generally my opinions. I think that was
I don't even remember back that far. So
it was 2 days ago in Mark's defense. Tom Brady retired. That's such old news now. No, dude, you're still recording that same episode. Oh, really? All right, we'll be back Thursday. I think it's our annual Don't Say the Super Bowl episode. We will not utter that that phrase on Thursday's show, but we will be talking about something, presumably, and it will take about an hour and a half to do so. Until
then.
40,
I think we can do 45 on Thursday.
No, see, this is what I'm talking about. It's not that I have any issue, Dan, with the actual right. length of the show. It's this mystical conceit we go in with right. that it's, you know, I'll tell someone I'll be somewhere in an hour and then I'm 45 minutes late because the show is 187 minutes long.
Right. Who are you meeting up with later?
Right.
What's going on?
Where are you going?
I've learned to say that I can meet no one ever now. That's my new, I've learned by now.
You're conflicting. Yeah.
Where are you going?
Conflicting
things
here. I have
learned by now. And would you end the show? Just take us, like, just let's go.
All right. Until Thursday. Heed the call.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring body wash and bar soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.